Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and live from Houston, Texas. This is Dr. John Stamey and welcome to Houston Bigfoot. We've got a great, great show tonight. We're going to have a lot of fun. My co-host is with me, Kyler Smith from Houston as well. How are you doing tonight, Kyler?
John, I'm doing awesome. I'm super excited for the guests that we got on. So, yeah, let's get started.
You better believe it. Okay, first of all, tonight we've got an old and good friend of mine and a new and good friend of mine, so it's going to be great. First of all, from Ewing, Virginia, and nobody but Matt knows where Ewing is. Matt, you'll have to tell us. It's Matt Delph. How are you doing tonight, buddy?
I'm doing great. Yeah, Ewing, Virginia, parts unknown, as you call it.
And that's right. That's what we call it in the wrestling business. You better believe it. It's parts unknown. It's somewhere in that lower western tip of Virginia, correct?
Yeah, the Cumberland Gap area.
The Cumberland Gap. Oh, that's right. That's what they sing about in that song. God, who does that song that I like so much? Oh, well, whatever. Yeah, you know who it is.
I
can't
think of
it right now. I know. That's right. But anyway, we're glad to have you here. Matt's an experienced Bigfoot hunter and paranormalist. He's gone out and looked for about everything. So it's great to have him here. He's a frequent guest on ScaryCast. He was, when we started our conferences back after after COVID, Georgia Bigfoot, he was one of the keynote speakers there. So anyway, glad to have you here, Matt. And you have introduced us to a brand new friend who's going to be pretty darn cool, I think. This is from Clarksville, Tennessee. I hope I got that right. It is Elijah Henderson. How you doing, Elijah?
I'm doing good, my friend. It's good to be on with y'all tonight. And you absolutely did get it correct. It is Clarksville, Tennessee.
That's right. I know you've got a big military base. I had an old friend who was stationed there for quite a while, and you're kind of up in that northern tip of Tennessee where there's lots of strange things that go on. Am I correct?
You're very correct. There's quite a bit of things that go on, not so much in Clarksville itself, which is unfortunate, but right around it, there's quite a bit around Clarksville.
Exactly, and as you go straight up, aren't you headed toward land between the lakes, Lake Kentucky and everything?
Well, you go a little bit west and north. You got land between the lakes over there, which cross across both Kentucky and Tennessee. It's the largest inland peninsula in America. You got close by Clarksville, the Adams, Tennessee, the home of the Bell Witch haunting. Up north in Hopkinsville, Kentucky, you got the Kelly Goblin site where the Hopkinsville Goblin incident happened. You also got Edgar Casey buried there. You got close to Clarksville, Tennessee in Dixon. You got the White Bluff Screamer. You got Werewolf Springs. You got the Montgomery Bell State Park. Has been a Bigfoot hotspot before. There's quite a bit of stuff that goes on around us. Over in Indian Mound, Tennessee, there's quite a bit of Bigfoot activity over there. A lot of really interesting research over there. But, yeah, man, we're kind of in the epicenter of a lot of things.
Well, you're kind of like the Carolinas and Charleston and Myrtle Beach and Columbia. All of South Carolina's got a lot of haunted places, I'm going to tell you that. Whether they're ghosts or they are cryptids or there are UFOs. Oh, Myrtle Beach is like the world capital in South Carolina of UFOs. We have a number of scout ships. I don't know if y'all know what those are. Those are small things. They're about maybe two stories high and maybe two stories wide. They're not very big, but they'll come in from the ocean and they'll zoom into you and catch you off guard if you're sitting there in one of those high-rise condos, and they'll just come up to you within about 50 or 100 feet. They're totally scary. Stay away from scout ships. They are orange, and don't mess with them. Go inside. Lock your door. I mean, that's what we say down here, so you got to be careful about that. But anyway, just leave them badly enough alone, I'll tell you that. They're pretty scary. So, Matt Delph, you're the one that introduced us to Elijah. How did you meet? Tell us how you met Elijah. And then, Elijah, tell us a little bit about your family's background in the cryptid hunting business. So, Matt, hats off to you first. How'd you meet Elijah?
All right. So I'd met him, I believe, over in Kentucky at a I was a speaker, and you guys were a vendor, I believe, weren't you, at the Kentucky Crypticon?
The one over in Harlan, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one.
And yeah, and so I'd met and talked with him and his family were there, and they were selling merchandise there, and they were getting stories, gathering evidence, reports, stuff like that, witness reports, which is a great place to do it. If you're going to start getting reports, that's the best place to do it. I met him there, and we just kind of kicked it off from there and developed a relationship over the past few years, and I've been out with him to Werewolf Springs, and we went to Land Between the Lakes, and just loved his family first time I met him. They just clicked. They knew what they was talking about. They was eager to learn, and we just kept in touch.
And hopefully there'll be many more of those outings in the near future.
Most definitely.
Well, that's great. So you met them up there. And in fact, Matt, was that the conference that I was supposed to go to and I wasn't able to make it?
I believe it was. I believe it was.
Golly,
yep.
Actually, if I'd gone up there, then Elijah, I would have met you and your family a lot earlier. Yeah, I had to call Tony Pelosi.
I reckon so.
Pardon?
I reckon so. I reckon we would have.
Yeah, because, I mean, it was terrible. You know, I had car trouble, and I called him at like 6 o'clock in the morning. I said, Tony, I wasn't able to get up there last night and get a hotel room because, you know, and the dog died and the cat ran away, and it rained on my parade, so I'm sorry. He said, well, no problem. I said, tell Matt that I'm sorry I can't be there. And so it's a shame because I was going to talk about my favorite boy, the Lizard Man, you know, and Lizard Man and I are old buddies, I'll tell you that. But, Matt, that's cool how you met Elijah. And now, Elijah, tell us a little bit about you and your family and your history with cryptid hunting, okay?
Okay. Well, I guess how we basically got a start in all this is that my dad, when he was a little boy, he would always hear the stories passed down of Bigfoot and oddities in the Appalachian Mountains, you know, passed down to him. He would always hear about my family around in the 60s. They lived in Dayton, Tennessee at the time, and it was a lot more grown up than it is right now. It's still a very simple town, but it's grown from what it was. And at the time when my family was younger, they would be walking home at night, and up on the embankment up on top of one of the hills, something would be walking up at the top, and they could see, like, little stones falling and whatnot as it walked. If they walked, it would walk. If they'd stop, it would stop. If they'd run, it would run. And they'd eventually run back to the house, and this thing was following them, and they'd get back in their house, and they didn't quite have I think it was actual locks on the door, but they would shut it, and they'd push the stove up against the door to try to keep it out. But you could see the door, it would grab the knob and it'd be shaking the door back and forth. It didn't quite know how to operate the actual doorknob mechanism, but I guess it'd seen them work it and it would grab the doorknob and shake it. And things progressed to the point where all the family, you know, they're sitting around listening to Loretta Lynn records, and they start hearing this raspy breathing, and they looked toward one of the windows, and something was looking in, watching them. And it had red eyes, and it looked like a monkeyish face, but it had kind of a wide nose like an old man, and it was just sitting there watching them as they went about their night. And, you know, this was Appalachia, so they did the southern thing, and they decided they were going to take the gun and go outside and shoot it, whatever it was. Well, they got outside. Nothing was out there. It was just darkness, and things eventually progressed to the point where on one of my aunt's farms, she had a bunch of hogs, and, you know, these hogs just kept disappearing, and hogs were their livelihood at the time, you know. They thought some peckerwood was coming in and stealing their hogs and messing with their livelihood. So a couple of my family members did a bit of a stakeout, and they watched these hogs to see who was coming onto their land and stealing them. And they were sitting there watching, and they one of these gentlemen, he was a very mean individual. He didn't fear anybody. I'm not going to describe everything he did, but he'd been, you know, arrested for some ghastly things before, and he just wasn't afraid of people. But he described that it looked like a gorilla loped out of the woods, picked the hog up by its front legs and its back legs, swung it over its shoulders, stepped back over the fence, and walked back off into the woods. And he said, "I wouldn't have shot it for anything. It would have just made it mad." And there's another story, too, like that out there, but those were the kind of stories that were passed down to my dad. So we always had a fascination in Bigfoot and things of the nature, but we didn't really start getting into any kind of research until we were camping at Montgomery Bell State Park. It was about 2002, 2003. I was about 5 years old. And toward the end of the day, the camp ranger, the park ranger, came around asking people if they'd like to watch a park showing of their documentary called The Legend of Werewolf Springs. And, you know, my dad, he loved werewolves. I'm sitting in his old bedroom around his book collection, and it's just werewolf book after werewolf book. He loved werewolves. And, you know, sure, we're going to go watch that. But it described the area on the backside of the park called Hall Springs. That's its official name, that in the late 1800s, along the railroad that runs along the backside of the park, a circus train for the Cornhog Circus was coming through the area, and for whatever reason, it derailed. I think around the time there were railroads being sabotaged, and I don't know if maybe that's, according to town lore, what caused it to derail. But anyway, the animals that they were carrying along with them as their exhibits, the boxcars busted open, and they escaped. And they were able to recapture everything except something they had on their manifest listed as either a wolfman or a wild man of Borneo, and it was a male and female that they were never able to recapture. Following that point, there was reports of a werewolf in the area, and it even culminated in a landowner and a farmhand going down the road in a wagon. They're carrying something like I think it may have been a glass door or some sort of a door, and they seen the werewolf, so to speak, standing on the side of the road around the woods, and they tried to speed up their horses to get away from it, and it started giving chase to them. They sped up their horses a little more, and it started chasing them, and it eventually caught up to their wagon and started to climb into the back of the wagon, and they realized, you know, we're not going to both make it out of this, so you go left, I'll go right, and we'll, you know, hopefully one of us will get out of this. So the landowner jumped off, and he went off into the woods and hid behind like a fallen down tree, something like that, and he could hear the sounds of his farmhand being torn apart by whatever this was. And there's more interesting stories about Werewolf Springs, but where I'm going with it is that we watched that documentary, and we eventually decided a couple months later that we were going to go to Werewolf Springs because we'd found the area. And my dad, he was in construction at the time. I guess it was around White Bluff. It would have been part of Dixon, but probably part of actual White Bluff. Maybe so. It's definitely Dixon. But anyway, he's doing construction at the time, and he would hear stories on the construction site about that cemetery that's at Werewolf Springs. Supposedly, when you go either at midnight or whenever there's a full moon, you'd see a werewolf walking across the cemetery. And, you know, that kind of caught his interest, too. But we went down there and walked down the main trail. It's one main trail. And as we kept going further down it, they noticed in the grass, it was along the side of the path. It looked like it was pressed down, like something big had walked through there. And let me back up and say it was me, my sister, my mom and dad, my grandmother, and my cousin. We were all down there checking the spot out, and we stepped off into the woods following that grass, and there was a branch about shoulder height. It's kind of twisted off in kind of a Bigfoot fashion. So we kept going, and we found on the ground there, it was like a half half circle of turkey feathers on the ground is laid out in a half semicircle. It almost looked like someone had been squatting down there and just kind of plucking it out and just setting it on the ground around it, I guess about to eat it. But that was something we found there. But this all culminates in we walked a little bit further, and some of the ladies, they answered the call of nature, so to speak, and the wind started to pick up a little bit. And on that railroad along the backside of the park there, a train started coming through, and it started blowing its whistle. And then in response to that train whistle, something...
Elijah, huh? Before you go any further, about what time of day was this? Was it bright daylight, dusk, or evening?
I honestly can't remember for sure. It seemed like a storm kind of started to kind of, not quite a storm, but some bad weather started rolling in a little bit. This was probably toward the evening, I'd say, as best as my recollection can. But anyway, that train whistle started blowing, and something responded to it. Almost sounded like it was howling in pain at it. It sounded like an 800-pound wolf howling, but it was so loud it would vibrate through your chest. It'd just shake you in your chest. And it is about the most terrifying thing. I mean, being 5 years old, it absolutely terrified me. But it was so loud that there was other people hiking at the time. There's a couple of ladies on the main path who they had jogged into the park, and they had a baby strapped to their chest. When we got back out of the woods, they were jogging out of the woods, running away from, you know, whatever was howling. We never seen it, but you could hear it, and it was so loud it would literally, you could feel it in your chest. And following that event there, you know, we started, I guess, researching more, and we eventually got in contact with the group that would meet over in Standing Stone State Park over in East Tennessee, Chattahoochee Bigfoot Organization, and Mary Green was a part of that. And we met a good friend of ours named Nathan Davis over there, and we researched with him for years and years. But that's really how we got into it, and it just kind of progressed more and more. I was terrified for years and years of Bigfoot, and gradually I just got a little bit more comfortable, and now you can't keep me out of the woods.
Be careful in those woods.
I noticed you said that the women, that is me, Matt, and you said that the women had went to the call of nature there. A lot of times women, especially if they're on their cycle, will attract things like that as well. They can smell that scent, and it'll bring stuff. That's why I would recommend, just out of safety, that females don't go out during certain times out in the woods if it's a hot spot.
You're absolutely right about that. Are you familiar with Lisa Lycan?
I've heard the name, and I know who you're talking about, but not familiar with her.
She shared with me a story that somebody was having issues with the dogmen on their property, but they kept throwing away that kind of trash outside in the trash can outside of their house. And I forget if they stopped throwing it out there, if it stopped. But around that time, they're definitely having a lot of trouble.
It makes sense.
But, basically that's how we got involved in all this, and it just kind of progressed to where we are today.
Right. Hey, Kyler, you got any questions for these guys?
Yeah, so since then, when you were 5 and you had that experience, I mean, have you run into anything close to that that kind of, you know, put you in that situation again where you were scared out of your mind?
Well, I don't know if it's from being scared as a child or not, but I do still kind of get nervous in the woods sometimes. A lot of times just me and my sister will go out, you know, just ourselves, and it will get creepy. I don't know if it is, you know, from that childhood terror that it kind of activates a little bit. Now, if there's a group, you know, I'm as relaxed as can be at times, but, you know, there is times when I'll get a bit nervous in the woods, and I don't know, maybe maybe if it does stem from that.
Okay, I was just curious because, yeah, I feel like if you went out specifically looking for something, you know, I would personally, I'd be a little scared just thinking about, okay, we might actually find something.
What's kind of funny, though, is, you know, I wouldn't hardly go into that part of the park, Werewolf Springs, at the time. About the only person that could get me to go was my dad, and I would hardly go with him. But I loved Bigfoot. Every time I go to the library, I'd come home with a big stack of Bigfoot books. You couldn't keep me away from it, but you could keep me away from it, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Well, that's very, very interesting. Now, Elijah, I'd like to ask you, you have become increasingly involved with tales and looking out for Dogman, haven't you?
I reckon so.
How have you progressed looking out for Dogman, and how has that turned out?
How did we get into actual Dogman research, you mean?
Yes.
Well, we used to think for a long time, you know, we've done Bigfoot research for years and years, me and my family. My dad would always go into the woods about every chance he got looking for Bigfoot. And he is always a big fan of werewolves, but he always thought that the topic of Dogman was just a misidentified Bigfoot of some kind. And we had a friend over at the house who brought over Barton Nunley's documentary, Hunt the Dogman. And that for me was the first time I'd heard of, you know, the famous Beast of LBL Dogman attack. And that's kind of how I got largely introduced. But we didn't really fool much with Dogman until my dad started listening to encounters on YouTube and whatnot. And he started realizing, well, there's no way this could be a Bigfoot. There's literally something in the woods people are seeing that looks like a werewolf. And once he made that connection, it was on. I mean, we were in Land Between the Lakes about once or twice a month, or in Werewolf Springs, or just talking to anybody we could that had a Dogman sighting, and just all sorts of researching, you know.
Right. In fact, you talk about that impressive and terrifying Dogman story. We talked about that just briefly before the broadcast when we were kind of in the green room and I was sitting there enjoying it. Do you mind recounting? Because you know probably a lot more about that story than most of us know from what we've read in books and everything, because you have encountered not just Dogman, but you have encountered a guy named Roger.
Right. Well, let me sort of tell how that whole story went down. I do want to make it known I haven't actually seen a Dogman in person. I haven't had, or that I would know of. I haven't had that highly coveted encounter that I want, but I'm still working on that. But anyway, to boil down the Beast of LBL story, I got to start with this, that the story originated with Barton Nunley and Jan Thompson. She brought the story to him that a family of four was attacked and killed in Land Between the Lakes by a Dogman creature, and he published that in his book Mysterious Kentucky. And as time has progressed, you know, other people have came out and told renditions of the story, or they've had a park ranger friend that would tell them tidbits about the story and whatnot, or multiple law enforcement officers come out and said, you know, this definitely happened. A family came up here, family of four came up here and got attacked and killed by something. Now, I'm sure largely everybody's familiar with the story in general. You know, family four goes up there, they're getting their camping area set up in their RV, and something comes up and attacks and kills them. Now, getting to Roger, about the end of 2020, me and my family, we went camping up at an area called Standing Stone State Park. Y'all may have caught I said that earlier. that's where the Chattahoochee Bigfoot Organization used to do their fests, and Mary Green would come up there and visit, and we had a lot of good times up there. But, you know, there's not a whole lot of activity to be had there anymore, but we still like the area, beautiful cabins up in the mountains. It's just a beautiful area, so we went up there for Christmas. While we were up there, if y'all recall, that bomb came through and hit Nashville, and when we went, that was the first time that they'd actually had phone service down to the cabins, because every other year, you know, they just didn't have that technology down there. They had it this year. The bomb went off in Nashville, and it knocked out the service. So while we were down there, we'd have to go to special areas in the park to get signal, and I was going through some of the YouTube comments on our documentary about the Beast of LBL, and a gentleman had commented on it, given a lot of very unique details about the attack that we'd never heard before, and, you know, we decided to get into contact with him, and as we started talking with him, he conveyed to us that he was actually a survivor there, that he was there with the family when they got attacked, and basically what he described was one of the reasons you can't find anything about the family anymore is that they were from LaGrange, Indiana. They were actually a family of Amish that left the Amish community up there. And this gentleman, Roger, when he was a little boy, he was friends with the little boy that got attacked. And they went on vacation. They let them ride up. They let Roger come with them on a vacation to Land Between the Lakes. And, you know, they were all up there visiting. And they'd had a couple of shotguns with them. When they got there, Roger had some soup cans that he was going to go out and target shoot with this, I think it was a 410 crack shot with birdshot in it. I think that's what it was. But he had his soup cans and he was going to go shooting. And the father and the son, the father's name was Levi, according to him. The son's name was Stephen. The little girl that has become famous for, they say that after the family was attacked, the little girl there, they were searching, the cops came, and they were searching through the RV, and they found little girl's clothes, and they realized that we have a body missing, and they eventually found her hanging up in a tree dead. That little girl, supposedly her name was Connie, according to Roger, and she was the one that was supposed to be up in the tree. I'll get back to that, but anyway, the mother's name was Diane, according to Roger, and Levi and Stephen, the father and the son, went down into one of the ravines. They took care of leveling the RV. It had self-leveling systems in the RV, and they went to go get firewood. They went down into a ravine to get firewood, and I guess something was down there because they started running up out of the ravine. The son ran around to go get back in, to get back inside the RV, and the father opened up the driver's side door and was grabbing a shotgun, a pump-action shotgun that was under his seat or behind his seat, one of the two. But the dogman creature was able to catch Stephen, and it had him. He said it was almost like an anaconda squeeze or something like that, and it had him. And the father shot the dogman, but he ended up, a few of the pellets hit his son Stephen, and Stephen ended up, I guess, dying from the attack. Then, while he's trying to pump another shell into the shotgun, this dogman creature went after him and killed him. Well, Roger, he was inside the RV at the time, and he's seen this happen. He grabbed his 410 crack shotgun, and as it was walking away, he kicked the door open, and he shot it as it was walking away in between the shoulder blades, and it made that cry, like a very high-pitched cry, and he said it started bleeding profusely, but it's like right in between the shoulder blades, and it dropped to the ground for a second and then started going down the ravine. About that time, I think it was the little girl, she said, he heard her scream, "It's coming in through the window," so he thought that maybe there was two of them at the incident rather than one. He dropped the gun, ran out, and he thought they were following him, and he got on the ground and rolled underneath the RV, and he got in between the framework and grabbed and held onto the drive shaft of the RV and held on and waited there. And he thought that the mother and daughter, Connie and Diane, were coming with him, but they stayed inside, and he could hear it dispatching them, so to speak, inside. And he said that when everything got quiet, he let go and he crawled out and he ran back to the road, I guess, as fast as he could. And when he got back to the main road, where this area is, it's not actually very far from the road. So that part of the story does make sense. When he got back to the main road, there was a truck coming up along the road, and he flagged it down and got a ride with him.
Now real quickly, Elijah, about what time would all of this have transpired?
I want to say he said it wasn't quite dark yet, but it was getting dark, if I'm not mistaken. It's been a little while. Forgive me, everybody, if I'm a little fuzzy on some of the details. It's been a little while since I watched, you know, the interview we had with him. Don't hold it against me if I get a thing or two wrong, but I'm remembering best of my recollection.
Now, was this an interview with Roger?
Yeah, we got that on our channel, Cryptid Studies Institute. It was an interview me and my dad had, Johnny Henderson, with Roger. That was maybe January 2021 or so. No, it probably been a little bit later with that. I think we had the first phone conversations with him in January, but it would have been in 2021 when we had it.
Now, was this an in-person interview?
No, it's all been on the phone. He actually lives up in Iowa right now. But, yeah, we've had plenty of phone conversations with him, text with him every now and then, you know, still. We got his phone number, so, you know, I talk with him every now and again.
Okay, that impressive. So everybody, now tell us the name again of your channel, your YouTube channel, so that we know where to go get this fantastic interview.
The channel is called Cryptid Studies Institute, and the video you're going to be wanting to look for, let's see, what was that called? I got the channel pulled up. It was something like Beast of LBL Update, Witness to Attack Comes Forward. Let's see here. Witness to Family Attack Comes Forward, Beast of LBL Update. So that's what everybody is going to be wanting to look up if they want to see that interview. But Sorry, friend.
No, please go ahead.
Roger described that when he got in the car with this gentleman, he got in the truck with him, and he was so terrified he kind of got knelt somewhat in the floorboard of the truck. And the gentleman drove not too far away from the probably up close to around Grand Rivers where he went, but he took him to his house and he went inside, and I think Roger was sitting at the kitchen table, he said, and the gentleman that drove him there went off in the other room and he was talking on the phone with somebody for a while. And after a little while, two men showed up at the door, and they wanted to take Roger back to where everything happened, and they took him back to the scene of the crime, so to speak, where everything would have happened. And it was, I believe it was nighttime at that point, and when they got there, there were military-type people there, I believe he said, and they had light shining on this tree. And this is the part of the story that he always wanted to make sure he conveyed the most, that the most, it'd have to be the most famous part of the story, or one of the most famous aspects, is that the little girl was dead hanging up in the tree. He wanted to convey to everybody that it wasn't her up in the tree, it was actually that dead dog man up in the tree. He was hanging up there, and Connie, the little girl, was about 100 feet away from the actual RV. Now, Connie had been wearing, he said, a sweater, I think it was a green sweater, and he didn't know exactly how this happened, but the dogman had a little piece of her green sweater in its claws. He figured maybe she was playing outside and got hot or something and took it off or wrapped it around her waist or something. But he's not exactly sure how it happened, but he said it had a little piece of that green sweater in its claw. And from that point, I think he said that, I think it was his grandpa, he said, came down from upstate and picked him up. And, you know, it just kind of went from there.
Now, one thing that you said was that there were there were basically men in uniform that looked like the military was there cordoning off the area.
I believe that's what he said. I think he said it was like military types and there's military trucks up there. I don't want to misquote something and somebody think I'm a liar or something like that, but I believe that's what he said.
Okay.
That there was military trucks up there. But he also wanted to convey that there was no actual police cops on the scene of the crime when this happened, that it was all these more military types. There's no actual cops at the scene of the crime. But, you know, as many people, as many cops as have kind of said that this happened, that they were on the scene of the crime, I personally suspect that when Roger was taken off the scene, maybe a day or so later, cops came in to do a local investigation that, you know, that's how I would view it personally.
Wow, that's great. This is a super recounting of that story. And if we want to, we go to your YouTube page and we can hear the actual interview with Roger and your father, correct?
Yes, sir. It's from about a year ago. But for the people that want to watch it, it's called Witness to Family Attack Comes Forward, Beast of LBL Update. And there's a couple of videos on the channel with Roger for those who are interested.
Yeah, I'm actually looking at your page right now. What were you saying, John?
We haven't got as much out as we should in quite a while. Last year we had a lot of tragedies. In May, my mother passed away from breast cancer. And September, my dad passed away from COVID-19. So it kind of dampened, you know, a lot of the stuff. We didn't get as much videos on last year as we would like to have. And I've been kind of taking a little bit of break myself, honestly, so I haven't been doing much on there. But I hope to get back into it very soon. I'm actually working on things, but, you know, the process of time involved with making things.
It takes a while to get things to happen. It really does. You're speaking to the choir, you know, because I'm an author and trying to get books done and put up on Amazon, it just takes forever. So we certainly understand how you can become bogged down to try to get things done. Yeah, so let's let Matt and Kyler and then wrapping up with me on this episode, part of the episode, let's ask you a question. So, Matt, do you have a question that you would like to ask Elijah about this incident?
We all know the story or whatever, and there's a lot of controversy about this video or the witness coming through. I was kind of curious, what was the controversy about with this guy coming forward? Why was people so angry? To me, in my honest opinion, if there was he claims that he crawled up underneath and hung onto the drive shaft or whatever, if there was other dog men there, one of them probably would have smelled him out and, you know, they would have got a scent and could have pulled him out of there if they wanted. But unless he shot, you know, that scared him or whatever. But what was all the controversy about? What did you get so much backlash for? Because you're just the messenger.
And to tell you the truth, it almost started like a civil war in the community. You know, you got a lot of people for him and you got a lot of people against him. Like that point you pointed out about something potentially being able to smell him out, that was something that was debated upon. People also debated that when he crawled under there, the drive shaft would have given him third-degree burns or worse, but that's not simply not how a drive shaft works. But who can say, you know, people have done research of their own up there, and I don't know if maybe for some people it's made them jealous or, you know, they have heard things and it doesn't match what they heard, so it makes them mad and they're just fired up against it. But it definitely made a lot of people angry. There's a large following for Roger and there's a lot of people that hate Roger. You see people on there all the time telling them that they agree with them, and, you know, you read a lot of other people saying, "Oh, this is a load of horse crap," you know. We've always tried to look at it through the lens of, you know, here it is, taste it and see if it's agreeable to you. You know, we're not saying we can't prove that it ever happened, but you know, he sounds like a very honest man. You know, there's been things against him, there's been evidence for him. You know, it really almost has to be one of those make up your own mind kind of things on it.
Yeah, as a good researcher, you've got to be open to all options. You got to hear every story. You got to hear everything. You can't just limit it. Oh, to if you put these blinders up on certain things and you say it's got to be this, got to be that, then you'll never learn anything. And that's
right.
Why you got to be open to every story, everything. Yeah,
and
kind of curious why
there
was so much backlash.
There have been people that, you know, they don't want anything else to do with Roger, anything else to come out about him. But, you know, there is still good, potentially good evidence to be uncovered there, you know, if he is telling the truth. So,
as a true researcher, yeah, you got to hear every story. As a true researcher, you got to hear every story.
Absolutely. I need to do another update with him at some point. We had one planned, and then when we announced it, everybody just started exploding. They're furious about it. So I was like, you know what? I'm not even going to do it. And I deactivated my channel for a little while because, you know, it was such a huge headache. I was like, I got a good option for you. I'm going to deactivate my channel. So I deactivated it for a little bit of time. And it wasn't just like one person or anything like that. It was a lot of people that were upset about even doing an update, but I got fed up and just didn't even do it. So hopefully we'll still do that at some point, you know, but we'll see. I imagine we probably will.
Yeah, well, that's a great question, Matt. Kyler, what do you have to ask Elijah?
I think that was one of the most intense sighting stories that I've heard yet. Like, I'm sitting on the edge of my chair right now, and I had the goosebumps while you were telling it. And I'm trying to – there was a part you were saying about the – they thought that it was the little girl in the tree, that they were flashing the lights, but it ended up being – something else. You said, I think you said it was the dog man that had her shirt in his claws or something like that. What did you say?
Well, the story as it originated, as it originally came out, was that after the incident happened, all the family was attacked and killed. There's a couple of hikers that came through and they found that this had happened. And, you know, they went to Grand Rivers and called the authorities. You know, they didn't have the number 911 at the time, but they contacted somebody, and when the police showed up and investigated everything, they went in the RV and found little girl's clothes in there, and they realized, hey, we got a missing body. We got a mom, a dad, and a son here, but we don't got a little girl. So, you know, they start sweeping the woods, and it was at nighttime, and they got to this one spot, and I think it was a gentleman wearing a Smokey the Bear hat, as the story goes, and blood started dripping on his hat, and they looked up, and they shined a light up there, and the little girl was found partially eaten up in that tree. Now, that's the story as it originally came out, but Roger wanted to maintain, he has always maintained, that it wasn't the little girl in the tree. It was actually a dog man dead up in the tree. I assume it may have been the one he shot, but it was dead up there, and it had a little piece of her sweater in its claws, and she was about 100 feet away from the RV. So obviously, more than likely, something grabbed her and carried her off a little bit, I would expect, for her to have gotten that far. But
So when Roger said that it was actually one of the dead dogmen's, or one of the ones that at least he shot up there, did you say how high up that it was? Because, I mean, when you say it's up in the tree, I'm thinking pretty high up there.
Honest answers, I'd be lying if I said I knew. I don't remember. He probably did mention it before, but I just don't remember what it was.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, I can't imagine going through something like that.
No, for somebody to go through something like that, I mean it'd be utterly terrifying.
I don't even know that I would have the stomach to share it with anyone. I would be, like you said, I'd be terrified.
And, you know, I guess that's the power of the story, whatever version you listen to. When you go into that spot where it happened, it's just kind of a sobering feeling being down there, you know. It's kind of haunting, not in a, I don't mean in a paranormal aspect, but, you know, there's a certain feel you get down there, you know, and we don't really tell a lot of people where it happened because, you know, you probably have a lot of weekend adventure hunters that may come to some harm, or it would become like a TikTok trend or something like that. Oh, a werewolf killed a family up here, and people would make a mockery of a spot where more than likely a family did come to some harm and died a terrible death, you know. So we always try to treat that area with a little bit of respect, you know, because there was such a nasty and ghastly history there. And, you know, that family is only one. We've counted us in Barton Unley around, I think, 15 deaths and disappearances up there that have been connected to creatures up there. And I know a former law officer, I think he told me that he has a count of 19.
Now, when we were there, we stayed at the bow hunter body site where they'd found the supposedly found the bow hunter that they had found that was been eaten on from up there. And that whole area, you can just feel the energy is different. It is definitely
different.
It's
a creepy spot down there.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the gentleman up there, like you said, was supposedly found in that field. It was a soybean field. And he was found when they found him, was partially eaten. Now, there are red wolves up there. The park will tell you there's no red wolves, but I've seen them there before. There's coyotes, you know, there's a... I'm sure there's probably big cat up there and whatnot, and around closer to Dover, around, well, it would have been around Cross Creeks. They found bear tracks before in times past, so, you know, there are things up there that could eat a body. So I wouldn't swear that was anything, but it has been for years that bow hunter connected to a dogman attack. Some people tell you that, no, it was actually not related whatsoever. But it is interesting that there have been dogmen sighted in that spot before, and we've had activity down there before. It's like a lot of coincidences there, you know what I mean?
So this is definitely a place to stay away from, probably.
If you want to see something or if you want to have activity, it's exactly where you want to go. But I'd be careful if you do go down there. We went down there. Might have been 2018, me, my dad, my mom, and my sister. And the area that me and Matt are referencing, it's a creek, and there's a road growing right through the middle of it. It's just a dirt road that goes down into the creek and back up, and there's a camping spot on the other side. But this is Jody Cook's research here. It comes from his documentary, Beast of Land Between the Lakes. In that documentary, they described that a mushroom hunter was up there looking for mushrooms, and it was a hot day, and, you know, he had a tent set up. And he went and laid down for a little while in his tent, and he heard something walking up near his tent, and he thought it was the ranger because he was worried because it was legal to hunt mushrooms up there. Whether that's true, I'm not sure. But he said walking through the wood line was, you know, like a werewolf-looking thing, and he had noted that he'd got to see what everybody was talking about, and it scared him. He left all of his belongings, and he left. But all this takes place down by a creek. And after hearing all these stories, we went down there and we were going to camp. We got everything set up. You know, we were going to tent camp up there. And it got toward nighttime and all these cottonmouth snakes started coming out. We counted about five or six of them. You know, my mom at the time, she didn't care if a Bigfoot was around. She didn't care about dogmen, but she despised a snake. She hated a snake. So, you know, we decided it wasn't really safe, and we weren't going to camp there. Now, me, I wanted to be up there, so I was a little bit disappointed. So my dad compromised a little bit. You know, boy, what we'll do is we'll go home tonight, but we'll sit around and listen for a little while. And we had all these tiki torches around kind of lighting up the area, and we're gathering up our stuff. My dad noticed on the other side of the creek some orange eyes shine over there. And I had a trail cam over there anyway. We needed to go over there. So we went across the creek investigating what it was. We had to pass by a coiled up cottonmouth. That was awful. And we got the camera, and we're shining the light around, and the orange eye shine turned out to be just a curious raccoon. So, you know, it was nothing. But as we kept looking around, I noticed some eye shine off in the woods, and it was a blue color, like an electric blue color. I was like, Dad, do you see that eye shine there? And he's like, whoa, where that really dark spot is? And as soon as he said that, it was a really deep grunt or growl. I don't know exactly how to describe it, but it was some really deep grunt. I don't know. And we started backing away. But when that grunt happened, something hit the tree in front of it, and it started to kind of, best way to describe it? Something hit it, and it kind of starts swinging back and forth, so to speak. That's best way I can describe it. But we started going back across the creek, passed by that cottonmouth again. That was awful. And we got back to their side, and, you know, we were ready then, you know. We were having some activity. So we sat around, and we were listening, and we had all these camp chairs. We were just sitting around listening. And we have a silent dog whistle. We've gotten some good results out of that out of Bigfoot research before, but we had never tried it with anything dogman related before. And my dad asked, boy, do you still got that silent dog whistle? Well, yeah. Why don't you give it a blow? So I puffed on the whistle. Nothing happened, but it didn't really sound like it was tuned too well. And I tune it again, and I puff on it, and 40 seconds later, it sounded like a T-Rex breaking branches and limbs coming out of the woods. And we start scrambling up out of the chair. I've actually got a recording of that audio. It's on our other Beast of LBL video, Dark Hollow, if anybody wants to hear it. But it literally sounded like a T-Rex coming out of the woods, and I think maybe the only thing that stopped it from coming out was we had the area lit up with all these fiery torches. So, you know, from that point, we start gathering our fire pit up, our torches and everything, and start packing up. What was really awful was while all this was going on, our tiki torch was working like one of those trick birthday candles. You couldn't put it out, and you'd blow on it, it'd go out, and then just poof back up. So we were like pouring a bottle of water on it to get it put out. And what was really awful was those woods that we were hearing that in, we parked right up against the wood line. So we had to go right up against the wood line where this sound had come from to get back in the car and leave. But that was probably the most intense activity we've had down there, I reckon.
Would you go back?
Yeah, that happened down in that spot that me and Matt went.
You know, and I guess what I would say is if you had something out there and it didn't come get you, it was probably a Bigfoot, because Bigfoot can either let you go or they can come disturb you. But it doesn't sound like a dog man going to let you be there undisturbed. That's just
one. Well, the one thing I'll say about that is we kept hearing all sorts of barking through the night, and a commonality with a lot of your dog man stories is that they'll have that electric blue eye shine. Now, it easily could have been a Bigfoot. I wouldn't have any way of knowing either way for sure.
Yeah, well, you know, that was just an observation, and albeit not a very well-educated observation, but I did want to make a comment about how the people took sides to the story of Roger. Now, I mean, first of all, I think that's absolutely stupid, because what does it matter? It doesn't matter to the history of the world. But I noticed when I covered the Sydney Monsters, that is a UFO incident in Taber City, North Carolina, right across the North Carolina, South Carolina state line. That little small town got very divided over whether or not these creatures were actually being seen. And they came to blows. I mean, one guy who owned several buildings took a handle of an axe and beat up another guy because he just didn't like what he was saying. And it's amazing to me that there can be so much contention about reportings of a sighting. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether or not you're going to go to work the next day or whether or not you're going to make a living. I mean, maybe I'm just and I'm not totally I'm not totally uninterested because I recount these stories in my book. I think they're interesting, but I mean I'm mad about them, and it just flabbergasts me that people get so upset one way or another. I mean, just it's like, well, you believe what you believe and go on. But they really don't do they, Elijah? They get fighting mad, correct?
They absolutely do. The people can get almost downright violent in this community, and I'm sure you've seen that before.
Well, I saw it in the stories from Cable City. The guy that owned five buildings and a very prominent townsperson came in and said, well, this is true. I was up in Congressman Charlie Rose's office when the call came in down here from Tabor City. Charlie Rose was a congressman in Washington, and Congressman Charlie Rose actually wrote about it in his newsletter to his constituents. I have a copy of that paragraph and a copy of the heading of Charlie Rose's newsletter. And, I mean, it's a fact that Charlie Rose got a call about this, and he reported it, but yet about half the townspeople were just up in arms that it was being simply reported. So I just don't – I don't know. Maybe we need to sometime have somebody that knows something about crowd psychology or something to come on and discuss what goes on with people. Again, Lord, it flabbergasts me that people are like this, but that's just me. But I do enjoy the stories, and I do like to recount the books for people to enjoy. I think a lot of people do enjoy them. People do like buying my books at events, and it's a lot of fun. So, I think it's great. And so what I'd like to do is, because we're getting near our witching hour, I'd like to let everybody go around, and I'm going to start – with Elijah, do you have a comment? We're going to do the comments. So, Elijah, what is the comment that you have as you kind of put this interview tonight to rest? And what do you have to say about it? And just anything you'd like to say?
Well, I reckon I'd just like to say it's been great meeting everybody. Matt, it's great talking to you again, brother. It's been great meeting you both, just a great crowd of people. And, kind of touching on what we were just talking about, all this, it's really, we believe it, but at the end of the day, it's technically not proven, So why fight about it? There's no reason to fight about anything in cryptozoology or the paranormal or anything like that. We should just all be good to one another, we're all out looking for the same truth in the end, just be good to one another. There's so much hate and contention in this, the worst people I've ever met, and I say this confidently, I have been in the cryptozoology community, but the best people I've ever met have been in the cryptozoology community. So you meet more good people than you do bad, but just be good to each other, it's not worth fighting over something that's technically considered mythology, even though we all know it's true. You know what I mean?
I'm sorry for laughing, but I agree with you. Well, I know it's true. I've seen enough. I've had Bigfoot encounters. I've got a phenomenal Bigfoot encounter in my book, Look Up in the Sky, and it is frightening. I mean, that is the most frightened I've ever been. I'm 5 feet away from a Bigfoot, and you know what? All I could say was, I can't believe this is happening to me. I didn't know what else to say in my head. And it's whatever. But, yeah, I agree. And I like what you said. And thank you so much. And I'm going to ask you back for sure. Is that okay?
Oh, that's completely fine. It's been great talking with y'all. And, brother, it's been great meeting you as well.
Yeah, and,
yeah,
and so we got Matt and we got Kyler, and then I'm going to wrap up. So, Matt,
Tyler,
what is your comment about tonight's story? I mean, stories, because they've been phenomenal. They've been really as good as stories as I have ever commentated over on a scary cast related broadcast. I mean, they've been as good as they can get. So, Matt, what do you have to say about tonight's stories?
Well, tonight, right there, just as the last topic right there about how the community reacted, okay, everybody always talks about, well, why doesn't the government knows about this stuff? Why don't they put it out there? Well, look at how people are reacting off of a witness report. They're fighting mad. That just goes to show you that society is not, they're not ready for this at a conscious level. They're not elevated enough at a conscious level to accept reality. That's why they get fighting mad. And that's why the government won't let this stuff released. That right there, I mean, look at it, how they're fighting over just a witness report. What do you think if they were to release, you know, all this stuff that they have on these cryptids and UFOs, aliens, all this stuff? Look at humanity's not, the biggest portion of the population not ready for this. You're going to have chaos. I mean, getting fighting mad just over a report.
And what I'll say, I want to make a comment to you on that. If you think about that great film from the early 50s, Day the Earth Stood Still, starring Michael Rennie, about the UFO landing on the front lawn of the White House, and this very calm, normal-looking, skinny dude comes out, and his name is Klaatu, and there is no notion of the people on Earth getting upset about it. They had no idea that people would get so mad about things like this, because the 50s, I think we were still rocking and rolling and reeling from World War II, and I don't think we knew how people would really react 50, 60, 70 years from then. So I think it's interesting how Hollywood completely, I mean, they just missed the boat. I mean, they did a good job with that film. It's one of the most classic, incredible sci-fi films ever made, The Day the Earth Stood Still, starring Michael Rennie. And, I mean, I saw it as a kid. I've seen it 10 or 11 times. But they really missed the boat and how up in arms people would get. And it's like, you know, and same thing with, I mean, don't laugh, but Plan 9 from Outer Space by the great Ed Wood. I mean, he didn't, he just portrayed the government getting mad and shooting off guns at UFOs. He didn't come up with the idea that people would go crazy. So it's amazing, you know, the way people act. And I think it's a very important thing to discuss, and it's a good topic. Because, you know, and what I love, because I've got to get to Kyler next, but it's like when we had the Georgia Bigfoot Conference, and I'll say this, my friend Reverend Lynn Myers, Matt, do you remember Lynn Myers?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm good friends with Lynn.
And he made everybody so mad, and that's why I have him there. Because he makes people mad. He gets them thinking, and I love seeing the reaction. It is. And so, I mean, you know, that's why I bring him there. And he knows that because people just go kind of crazy about it. But anyway, yeah, Lynn is a fine person, and he'll be at every conference I ever have. I just love to see how he gets people stirred up. I think it's good for him. I think that's one reason they come to a Georgia Bigfoot conference. And Kyler, you've got the last word. What do you think about tonight's topic? Any comments, questions, or whatever?
Well, surprisingly, before this, I would have disagreed with you guys. I would have said, totally, let's tell the public everything they need to know. And now, you know, going over this with what you guys have been saying, I completely agree. No one is ready for this. And everyone who does know about it, I mean, we'll be fine. That's not going to change. But, yeah, I definitely don't think this is something that should just come out like it's nothing. So, Matt and Elijah, thank you guys so much. This has been awesome to listen to. And I have your guys' YouTube page pulled up right here. I'm going to listen to that YouTube video as well, because that is very interesting.
Thank you, my friend. It's been good to meet you, Kyler.
Yeah, good to meet you, Kyler.
Great, Kyler. What we'll do is we will put a link to that on our Facebook, on the ScaryCast Facebook page. And we'll just make, and Matt, we have you back. We better.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Good, 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 good. So anyway, wanted to thank everybody. It's been a lot. This has been so much fun. It really has been, and we've got to do it again. There's a lot more to discover in just this little group about the paranormal. I call it the paranormal. I don't know what else to call it. I hate to call it cryptozoology because it borders on the paranormal, and who knows where we'll go. But anyway, thanks a lot. Thanks so much, Elijah. Thanks so much, Matt. Thanks to my co-host, Kyler. And we will see everybody next. Kyler, when is our next show?
We've got one at the end of the month on Tuesday.
Well, or maybe we'll do it a little earlier. We'll find a good guest. We might even do a little earlier. I'm sorry, but I guess I'm just kind of addicted to this type of show, and that's why I know that we all are and we all love it. So, look, I want to say thanks to everybody. We'll see you next time. Just watch the ScaryCast page. Watch the Houston Bigfoot page on Meetup. And we'll see everybody next time on the one, the only Houston Bigfoot. Good night, all.
Good night, everybody.
Have a good night, y'all.